The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, we'll be talking about kids and families living healthier lives, and I have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Megan Grega. Megan is co-founder and chief medical officer of Kellen Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to making the healthy choice the easy choice. Kellen provides school-based healthy lifestyle education and, quote, garden as a classroom programs, supports access to nutrient-dense produce via the Eat Real Food mobile market and Lehigh Valley Corner Store Initiative. She engages in participants in hands-on plant-based cooking classes in community settings and offers intensive therapeutic lifestyle change interventions for individuals and families. She is a summa cum laude graduate of Bucknell University with a Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry and Cell Biology and earned her medical degree from the University of Pennsylvania Medical School. Dr. Grega spent several years as a medical officer in the United States Navy, attaining the rank of lieutenant commander before resigning from active service duty. She has been a staff family physician at Hunterdon Medical Center, the director of Women's Health Services at Lafayette College, and is currently the managing director of Lantrazent Retreat and Wellness Center, the home of Kellen Foundation. She's a member of the ACLM Speakers Bureau and frequently lectures on the topics of lifestyle medicine at colleges, universities, hospital grand rounds, medical residency programs, and community forums. Mentoring residents, medical, dietitian, and nursing students is one of her passions. She's honored to serve as adjunct faculty for St. Luke University's Health Network Anderson Campus Family Medicine and Internal Medicine Residency Programs, and as a faculty advisor for the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University at the Medical Student Lifestyle Medicine Interest Group. She has been a featured speaker at American College of Lifestyle Medicine annual conferences, is a member of the True Health Initiative Council of Directors, and serves as a member of several national task force groups dedicated to the expansion of evidence-based lifestyle medicine services. Dr. Grega is a member of the American Academy of Family Physicians, a fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and is board certified in both family medicine and lifestyle medicine. Child and family health in general and the obesity epidemic in particular are issues in which Dr. Grega has had a long-standing interest. She believes the benefits of regular exercise, adequate sleep, supportive social connections, healthy food choices, and the art of balance are the keys to improving our children's future as well as our own. Towards that end, she's committed to finding practical solutions that can be implemented by families and communities to strengthen each other physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Megan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Sharon. I am thrilled that you invited me, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
So, Megan, you have done many careers. You have done a lot. Tell me about the kind of trajectory of, you know, how you went from being in the United States Navy in academics, still in academics, and then now heading a nonprofit, the Kellen Foundation.
Well, we really kind of start, I think, back when I was deciding whether to go to medical school. And I think when I was deciding whether medical school or other careers, I really wanted to be the type of family doc that we saw in Little House on the Prairie. I don't know how many of your listeners can remember back then, but like the family doc that took care of the whole town, the whole community, and really knew his patients and helped them stay healthy, helped celebrate big occasions with them. And so I said, okay, I think that's what I want to do. And I went to Bucknell, got my degree, and went to Penn, which was a great place to go to medical school. I learned phenomenally wonderful things as far as how to take care of patients and as far as like disease processes and what sort of medications to use. But I didn't learn a whole lot about how to help people change their lives from a behavior standpoint. But I said, okay, that sounds fine. I'll go into family medicine because that seemed to be the most modern day equivalent of that type of physician. And again, learned a lot of good things and took care of patients with motivational interviewing and learned all those kind of evidence-based guidelines about how do you take care of hypertension and diabetes. But after I had been a doc for a while, I realized, you know, I have these great patients, but I have such a short period of time to spend with them. And I'm doing all the things that I'm supposed to be doing as far as these evidence-based guidelines with their blood pressure meds and their diabetes meds. And they're still getting worse over time. You know, I'm now starting to have patients who are onto their second coronary artery bypass graft, or, you know, I'm adding more and more insulin. And I also saw in my pediatric patients that they just seem to be getting less and less fit over the years. I've been a doc, I guess, about 25, 30 years now. And they also seem to be having more and more issues with their weight and struggling with too much screen time and lots of sweetened beverages, things like that. And so I really tried to focus on my well child visits about all these healthy habits, but you know, you only see kids for well child visits once a year, maybe as they get older, it's even less. And then you only see them for sick visits later. And I would say, you know, decrease your sweetened beverages, get outside and play. But I wasn't making an impact. They were coming in year after year and they had gained weight. They were less fit. So I went to my hospital administrators at that point and I said, what can I do with these kids? I really would like to refer them to somebody who could help them change their lifestyles because their parents are my patients too. And I know where these kids are heading. You know, their parents already have high blood pressure or diabetes or heart disease, high cholesterol. This is where those kids are going. How can we turn this around before they get to that point? And my hospital administrators were like, you know, Megan, that's a great idea, but there's nowhere you can send them because they don't have a billable diagnosis yet. And I said, so we have to wait till they get sick before we can help turn this around? And they said, unfortunately, yes, there's no place you can refer them to. And I said, okay, well, how about if they come and see me and we'll have like group visits? That was before group visits were as common as they are now. And so that sounded really crazy to them. But I said, oh, if we do group visits with the families and we'll talk about lifestyle and we'll cook together and we'll exercise together. And they said, nope, because it's not billable for you either. And I said, well, then what am I supposed to do with them? And they said, well, why don't you send them to the Y, which I do think is a good thing. The Y does a lot of wonderful things, but I feel like you really need a behavioral support system to make these changes. And that's why we decided to found Kellen Foundation, which is taking lifestyle medicine out into the community where people live, work, and play, and where they have the most time that they spend with different relationships and support groups. How do we help people actually make the lifestyle changes that we know now, there's no question from a scientific evidence-based standpoint, we know this is going to improve their outcomes, their longevity, and their health so much better than the prescriptions that we write them or the procedures that we send them for. And I realized about, now it's about 13 years ago, that I needed to create this outside of the traditional medical model because the traditional medical model didn't allow for it. I'm thrilled to see that over the past decade and a half or so, we're moving more towards that in the traditional medical model because I, as you read through with all my different jobs, I do still see patients and take care of people in the traditional medical model. But I really feel that we have to get out into the community and we have to do more with groups and relationships and supporting people making changes where they live and where they are making most of their choices if we're going to make an impact on this chronic disease epidemic, because we can't medicate ourselves out of where we are now with our hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease rates in this country.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people listening can really relate to, you know, going to the doctor, I'm a pediatrician maybe once a year, you know, expecting to be told, you know, take the sugary drinks out and get your kids out to exercise and then going home and then struggling with, you know, how to implement certain things. Some parents find that, you know, maybe their kids are picky eaters or they're not home when their kids get home from school and can't necessarily control some of the things that, you know, they would like to see changed. Or sometimes it's so much ingrained in their family that they've always done things a certain way. It may be hard to break out of their own patterns and their own kind of family culture. What are things that you have done at the Kellen Foundation that, you know, parents and families can begin to start doing to change the trajectory so kids don't end up, you know, as their parents did if their parents were sick as they got older?
That's a really good question, or a great topic to talk about, because it's been a progression for us. We first started with intervention programs for families. And so that was for any family that had a child that was having issues with either their lifestyle choices, like those picky eaters you're talking about, or people that were already having issues as far as their children were overweight, or they weren't able to participate in sports because they were out of breath, you know, not physically fit. So we started these group intervention programs that were intensive therapeutic lifestyle change. We didn't call it back then because lifestyle medicine didn't even have a name back that far. But we said, okay, this is behavioral change supporting making healthier lifestyle choices. And we would have a intensive period where they would meet with me as a doc and do goal setting. But we did a lot of group visits for exercise and nutrition and cooking. And we found that over time, so the kids would have like the kids and families, and that's the key, families have to come too. So kids didn't come on their own. They always brought their parents and sometimes their brothers and sisters. And we would go on this journey together in a kind of intensive phase for about 12 weeks where we would see each other very regularly. So once a week or sometimes even more frequently. And then we would go on to a maintenance phase where we would see each other maybe once a month and then a little bit stretch out from there. This was very effective to have the support of a group as far as the nutritional counseling or the hands-on. So I don't even want to say it's counseling, it's doing. You know, it's like doing it with the people. And then also the structured exercise, they became a part of the martial arts program that we had at that time. And they really thrived. They really were able to change their lifestyle around with the support of other people doing it with them. And I can talk a little bit more about the techniques that we use. But what we noticed was once they left our program, they struggled, because they went back out into the obesogenic environment that they came from. And that's why they were having a hard time to begin with, is they didn't have a whole lot of support around them outside of this Kellen program. So my co-founder and I said, well, why don't we get out into the schools and see if we can start teaching in the elementary schools and try to sort of shift this social norm, shift the culture. I know, I'm sure you've heard of the concept of blue zones, and blue zones being the places in the world where the whole population lives longest. So it's not just a genetic thing that, you know, one person lives to 122. It's the whole population in those neighborhoods or those communities live to 80s, 90s, 100s, and they're still vital and active. And I said, why can't we make the Lehigh Valley like a blue zone? How can we get those social norms, that cultural change, so that people not only are able to make these healthy choices when they're in a very, very supportive, therapeutic, intense group, but then it's also they're nudged, they have those social nudges out in their own community. So we started in the school programs, teaching in third, fourth, and fifth grade, all about these healthy lifestyle changes or choices, but in an interactive, fun game type of a way. So in third grade, we go out and we do eat real food. And that all has to do with like, what is real food? So fresh fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, nuts and seeds, whole grains and beans, but also what is not real food. And we'd look at things like the sugary breakfast cereals and the sugar sweetened beverages and the processed junk food. And the kids become food detectives and they have to find the real food and what's not the real food. But then they also get a chance to actually eat a healthy snack from either their own school garden or from a local farm as part of learning about how delicious real food is. So we do that with third grade, and there's some other curriculum things that we do with them. But then in fourth grade, we do label readings. We do the healthy choices, red, yellow, green nutrition label classification system with them. And we get them up there doing math, and we get them, you know, tactile kinesthetic with their hands and feet, counting fat grams and looking at all the different sugar and everything. And then they're encouraged to go home with their parents and put little red, yellow, or green stickers on the food that is in their own kitchen. So they can really look at like, how much green food is in your kitchen? How much red food are you eating on a regular basis? And we talk about that. It's not that you never, ever eat a red food. You know, you can't say that you would never have French fries. You would never have birthday cake, but to really know as a food detective, how much of each are you eating and how is that affecting you? And we also talk about exercise in that one and screen time and sleep. And then in fifth grade, we do eating out survival skills because those kids are getting older and they're getting more social. So when you go out to a party or if you go out to a fast food restaurant, how can you be a food detective and find the healthiest choice where you are? It might not be as healthy as some of the food that you would choose to have at home, but hey, you're out, you're having a good time with your friends. where's your healthiest choice? And we kind of wrap all of that with the garden as a classroom program at about 30 of our schools now, that there's a school garden that the kids participate in growing some of their own real food, and then getting the parents involved over the summertime to help take care of the gardens. And we ask the whole community to come and just harvest, because we want this food out into the community. So it's like free veggies for anybody who's associated in that area. And that really changes the way families and kids start to think about food. Like, we hear from the teachers that at lunchtime, the kids are opening up their lunch boxes and going like, oh, that's a red food, or like, oh no, look, I've got an apple, that's a green food, you know, and they're turning it into a part of their discussion. Now, does that mean that they are always only eating healthy food? No, but it does mean that they have been exposed to it and have learned that it can taste good, like through the things that we taste from the garden. And we also encourage them to do this veggie challenge where they experiment with whether they can change their taste buds over time with the vegetable that they like the least. And we hear from the parents that the kids are going home and talking about this stuff. And parents will call us and be like, what salad did you feed my child? They want to have it. Where do I get it? And I'm like, well, it's in their school garden. You can go and harvest it. You can, you know, grow it at home too. And we give them the recipes for the salad dressing and everything. But by making it fun and making the kids as a whole group, so we try to do every school, every elementary school in a district, so that all of the kids are able to have this same sort of language to talk to each other as they're getting older. And the kids that we started with back probably about 10 years ago are now graduating. And so I often see teenagers, these big hulking guys and, you know, like wonderfully energetic women coming up, and they're like, hey, I remember you. You're like the healthy school people, or you're the healthy food people. And they remember all the way back from when they're in elementary school. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that if all kids are seeing and hearing about is the fast food, the sugary breakfast cereals, we all know how bad they are, how intense the advertising is towards them. Well, it makes sense that that's their perception of what is normal. But if you can bring them a new perception of normal and start getting them to think about, one of the things I love to talk to kids about is ask them, whose job is it for them to grow up to be healthy? And sometimes they'll be like, my parents. And I'm like, nope. And they'll be like, my doctor. And I'm like, nope. It's you. And usually somebody will get to like, it's our responsibility. I'm like, exactly. You are going to make billions of choices about what to eat and how to move your body and how to spend your free time over the next several decades of your life. And the choices that you make will determine whether you spend a lot of time with people like me, which is a doctor, or are you going to be able to spend a lot of time climbing mountains and playing soccer with your grandkids and being able to do the stuff that you want to do. It's really up to you. And so we try to empower kids to not just kind of go along with the dominant culture and eat whatever's around, but to move their body more and to choose healthier food and to get more sleep and to get off of screens as much and to be with their friends, because that's creating the type of life that they're envisioning for themselves. So that's one of the things I would say for parents is cook with your kids, because kids are very likely to at least try the stuff that they have tried, that they've had a hand in or participated in cooking. Grow some of your own food. You can use it in a pot. Like, we talked to our garden as a classroom program, each third grader gets to choose to take home either a tomato plant or a pepper plant, because they grow them on their windowsills. So they treat these plants like they're chill, like it's their pet. Like they plant it, they water it, they journal about it as it's growing, about how fast it grows and which one's first, the tomato or the pepper and all stuff. But then they take it home and they can have it at their house over the summertime, you know, outside. And a lot of our schools are inner city schools. Like, people don't have yards. Like, they don't have, but they have porches, or they have places where they can put a pot. So we've had pictures come back from kids where their tomato plant is taller than them by August that they had grown in their classroom and took home. And you know they're going to want to eat some of the cherry tomatoes that come off that plant, because, like, they're invested in that plant. That plant's important to them. So things like cooking with kids, cooking with your extended family, growing some of your own food, these are great ways to get people and families to shift to a healthier diet or a healthier choices.
Yeah, those are great suggestions, because so many families can implement. And the suggestions you have for the games that you do with the elementary students, those are fun games to do at home. You know, the picking, you know, red light foods or green light foods, and identifying, kind of making a game out of it, I think. It seems like it'd be a lot of fun to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could make a family competition out of it. You could be like, okay, we have a little chart. How many green foods have we eaten today? Oh, this one person's winning. Or how many red foods you get? That's actually something that we did in our intervention program, is there was a daily journaling component, and you got positive green points for good things that you did, like exercise. And I don't want to say good, bad, like it's a judgmental that way, but healthier things that you did. So if you were exercising, if you were eating fruits and vegetables, if you were not having sweetened beverages, you would get positive green points. If you did things that were less healthy, you got negative red points. So like if you skipped breakfast entirely, you got negative 20 points for that. And if you had more than one serving of juice, you got like negative points for that. But if you got more whole grains, or if you ate a healthy snack, you got positive points. And then people would be able to compare at the end of the day, like their scores. And it wasn't out of 100. It's not like you could get a perfect score, but it was more looking at it over time and comparing it with other people, because we are a very competitive species. So, you know, if you make it a challenge, then people are more likely to, almost like Dr. Greger always says, you know, nothing bad put in and nothing good taken out. Let's see if we can, how much good stuff we can have in our diet.
And, you know, you mentioned that you have programs in all the elementary schools within a certain district. How big is this program? How many schools are in the district?
Well, at this point, we are in 9 different school districts. We are in 40 elementary schools. So we are not in every elementary school in every one of those districts, though that is our goal to get to that point, because we really feel like it's important for this to be, like I mentioned, common language for the kids to hear, so that they are all getting the same type of nutritional education, and they're all being nudged towards those healthier choices, like through the veggie challenge or through being a food detective and finding real food. So in several of the districts, we are in every one of the elementary schools, and those are the districts we started in. And then as those school districts, Eastern Area School District, Bethlehem Area School District, those places, as the principals and the superintendents were talking about what was happening in the schools with Kellen Foundation, other districts started to call us and be like, hey, we want to have you guys in our schools too. So for us at this point, it's really mostly a funding challenge of this is a scalable model for us. We could go out and do every school in our area, but it needs to be funded from the standpoint of our instructors, basically. So we do a really, almost like an apprenticeship sort of thing with our instructors. The things that we teach the kids in schools are not hard. They're not challenging concepts, but being able to do them in a fun way that engages the kids, but also still maintains control in a third, fourth, or fifth grade classroom, you know, how do you manage an hour session with these kids? That's something that takes a special person and takes some practice. So we often see people that are very, very scientifically trained and intelligent, and they know what's a healthy diet, but or healthy activity, or you know, stress reduction, any of that stuff. But you put them into a third grade classroom, and the kids just, you know, they get them all derailed because they want to tell them stories and ask them questions and all, and then they end up not being able to go through the program, the curriculum that we need to, that we want to deliver. So what we do is we have a two-tiered approach. We have instructors that have been trained, that have gone out in the schools for a long time, that are able to model how to do this. And then we have interns and volunteers that come along with us and see it in action. And then when they're ready to start presenting themselves, we'll have one of our trained instructors in the rooms with them until they get to the point where they are ready to fly on their own and they're able to handle a classroom and get the important information across to the students. And we've really made this commitment because we know that the relationships with the schools are one of our biggest strengths as far as being able to help change the lives of these kids. And because of that, we respect the fact that schools want us to be there on time at the time that they have available for us, and that we are bringing good instructors that are able to provide a useful and impactful educational experience for the students. To do that, we have to make sure that we have people that are going to be there when they say that they're going to be there, but more importantly, know how to interact in a language that a third grader or a fifth grader is going to resonate with. And when that happens, it's awesome. I mean, the kids really get involved. but it's a process that can't run completely on a volunteer basis because it needs to have that structure.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you've certainly created a model, like you said, that's scalable and done it in a way where you've just grown tremendously, you know, and like you said, in 10 to 15 years to be in 40 schools is incredibly impressive. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And your foundation keeps growing. So you mentioned the school-based programs, but you've now expanded beyond those as well. What are other programs that you're currently doing and offering?
Mm-hmm. So our progression was from the intervention programs, which we still have a piece of, and then to the schools, because we said, okay, we want to change the environment and change the culture. And then we realized that we really had to also help people learn how to cook with this type of healthy food. And the reason we found this out is we were going to an inner city kind of after school program where we were thinking about doing one of the intervention programs, one of the things that we had talked about already earlier in this podcast. But there was a WIC clinic in that building, and the WIC clinic staff came to us and they were like, you know what, we have these $20 vouchers for a farmer's market here in Allentown is where it was. And we're having our patients or our clients hand them back to us because they're like, we don't know how to cook with this type of food. And so here's a WIC population that is having free access, you know, 20 bucks a week or however much they were able to give. It was 20 bucks. I can't remember how frequently they were allowed to use it, but they were actually giving that money back because they didn't feel like they could use the fruits and vegetables that they would get from the farmer's market. And my co-founder, Eric Ruth, and I were like, oh, this is terrible. We've got to figure out something to do about this because these are families that are food insecure with money available, but they need the skills. So we said, okay, well, for me as a doctor who had never learned anything about cooking in medical school or in residency or any of that stuff, and he's an accountant business guy, you know, that it wasn't his training either. But we said, if we can figure out how to make this stuff taste good enough for us to want to eat it, and now we can test it and see if we can make it good enough that like kids and families want to eat it, we should be able to get out there and show people how to cook with this type of food. And that's how Kellen Kitchens started, was us saying we have to be able to figure out simple recipes that can be inexpensive, that can be prepared with the whole family so that people can start to increase more of this produce and whole grains and legumes and everything into their diet. So at this point, Kellen Kitchens goes out and does 6 to 8 week cooking classes, but they're not really classes because the people do it with us. So it's a very much a hands-on culinary experience where the kids are coming up and chopping up the food. So we need lots of volunteers when we do this. We've got our Kellen Kitchen staff, but we need lots of volunteers to help with the knives and the stirring and the sauteing with the kids. And we have the families come too, so we make recipes together, and then they're all whole food plant-based. They are usually coming in at about $2 a serving or less from a cost standpoint, so that they're accessible that way. And then we all sit together and eat the meal that we made so that people get to taste it, and that also puts a social component that goes along to what we've been talking about relationships and building relationships and cultural social norms within a community. Having families sit together and talk about the way they like to prepare food, you know, like, oh, my son loved this, but he didn't like this. And then somebody else would be like, oh, I've got another way to prepare cauliflower. How about you try that? And so they're really use. And the other place this works really well is senior centers, because senior centers often, or senior living housing, because seniors are often becoming isolated. And they often are not cooking as much, even though they might have the skills to do it, because they're just cooking for themselves. And they're like, oh, you know, I don't want to put together a whole meal if it's just for me. But if you get a group of them that live in the same building together, well, now they're getting both the social part and they're having some good group forming, but they're now meeting people that they maybe could share meals with. You know, they could do potlucks. They could. So I love watching the senior center people or the senior participants, because they've got great ideas too for recipes. So it really is a give and take. And that's what I love about what we do with Kellen Foundation. It's not going out and saying to anybody, like, you should do this. Like, we're not doing it to the community. We're doing it with the community. We learn as much from them as they do from us. And seeing the groups form that then support each other, I think is one of the most satisfying things that we see. So Kellen Kitchens takes whole produce out into places where there's no kitchens. We just bring out our like induction burner or our little burners and our blenders and show people that it's not as intimidating to make these types of foods, and that the kids or the seniors or the father who's like, I'm never going to eat green beans, you know, that after they taste it, they are like, wow, this is actually really good. And they could see putting that into their own diets then.
Wow. It's wonderful that you can get so many people engaged and kind of evolve to meet the needs of the people in the community. You've mentioned at several points, you know, just this power of relationships and social nudges and supporting a healthy lifestyle. And can you speak a little bit more about how important that component is? Because a lot of people think, okay, I'm eating vegetables, I'm doing well. But eating vegetables with a family or a community or a group has an even more impactful effect. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. And then that actually leads into one of the other things that I forgot to mention, which is the Eat Real Food Mobile Market and the Healthy Corner Store Initiative. So when we're talking about groups and social norms, it's wonderful for your physician or for somebody to tell you, hey, here's some ways to be healthier, move more, eat more whole foods. But then if you live in a place where you don't have access to fresh produce or whole grains, or you don't have access to exercise opportunities, you know, it's kind of like telling somebody like, oh, go fly, you know, and they're like, well, that sounds like fun, but I really can't, you know, I'm not able to do that. So the fourth pillar of Kellen Foundation is food access, because we have 8 areas here in the Lehigh Valley that are considered food deserts that are both low income and low access to healthy foods. So the Eat Real Food Mobile Market has been on the road now for 4 years to address that that part of social nudges, which is bringing a 24-foot trailer into these neighborhoods every week, same time every week during the growing season. We have about a 22-week season where we go and we're at the places that we already have relationships. So we'll be in elementary school parking lots, we'll be in church parking lots, we'll be near community centers or senior centers. And we go and we park there for 2 to 3 hours so that the community can rely on us as a healthy grocery store on wheels. So we have fruits and vegetables and healthy grains, and we buy as much as we can from our local farmers, so it's supporting our local farm economy as well. But our biggest reason that we do it is for health. So we also get tropical fruits that we can't get here in the Lehigh Valley, like bananas and avocados and mangoes, because we want to make sure that when somebody comes to the mobile market, they can get what they need to make dinner or to have lunch or for whatever they need, they have the ingredients there. So at the mobile market, people can use their EBT SNAP benefits, they can use cash credit, debit card. We also accept the FMMP WIC and senior vouchers. And we have a wonderful partnership with St. Luke's University Health Network, where they use a fruit and vegetable prescription voucher for some of their patient population to then come to the mobile market and be able to choose fresh fruits and vegetables. Because the awesome thing about sending them to the mobile market and this partnership that I think works out so well is that there's not a single unhealthy thing available on the mobile market. So if you have a voucher for the mobile market, you know you're going to be basically getting fruits and vegetables and as much local as possible. But there's a relationship component to that too. So the relationship component is not just for the patients with the vouchers, though I think that does really play into the engagement that we see, where patients are coming week after week and using those prescription vouchers. But for the whole community, think about what it is, what your mindset is. If you walk out from your church or from your school or from your place of business, and all you see is fast food signs and, you know, corner stores that are not having produce, you know, that are showing things like hoagies and soda and, you know, come get your beef jerky or all those different things, your mindset is like, well, okay, that's what there is to eat around here. Like, that's your social nudge. Your nudge is go get a pizza, go get a hot dog, go get something like that. Whereas if you walk out and instead you see the Eat Real Food Mobile Market in front of you, or a school garden that has a whole lot of produce available, or any farmer's market, you know, farmer's markets do the same thing, different social nudge. You start to think differently of, oh, wow, look at that cantaloupe, or, hey, I would love to have that. I was thinking about making chili tonight. Look, there's the onions and the beans and everything's right here. I can just grab it. It does a different sort of thing in our brain of what is it that we're hungry for or what is it that we're thinking about. Same thing if you see a whole bunch of people at the mobile market or at the garden, that makes you think like, oh, wow, this is something people do here. Like this is part of what my community is doing. What's going on over there? I want to go look and see what's over there. And like for the mobile market, we always have samples. So we have recipes, we have samples. So every day we have free things that people can try and taste. And we make it a whole sort of like bonding experience. And they know our mobile market manager and our different staff members. They have all these conversations then about like, hey, look at this. This is you know, collard greens, or this is kale, or this is kohlrabi. Here's how you can prepare it. Here's a recipe you can take home. That is just a very different feeling than, oh, I'm going to walk into a fast food place and grab a dollar menu or something. So I think from a social nudge standpoint, and along with that is the Healthy Corner Store initiative, because the mobile market is on the road for about 22 weeks every season during the growing season. But we live up in more of the northern clime than you guys are. So once we hit November, people are not really coming outside as much, especially at night, because we hit daylight savings time. It gets cold, it gets freezing rain. So we thought just a couple of years ago, we're like, okay, the mobile market's great from June through end of October. What do we do for these communities when we're not on the road? And that's how the Healthy Corner Store initiative started, of thinking, how can we get healthy produce into some of these little, what we would think of as bodegas or corner stores in the neighborhoods we serve already? Because then there'll be access year round. And so we have some amazing kind of pioneering stores that have been willing to do this with us. And we provide the produce for them at a discounted like wholesale price. And they're allowed to order very small quantities, which is one of the reasons why most corner stores don't have produce, is because they can't get a wholesale price at a small enough quantity. Usually they'd have to get like a crate or a pallet or whatever, and they don't have room to store it. They don't have refrigeration. So if the produce goes bad, then they've really basically lost money. And so they're business people and they need to make money in their store. The way we do it is they're able to order, you know, they can order 5 pounds of apples. They can order a couple pounds of potatoes, and they can order whatever they need at small volumes, but at a low wholesale price. And then since we're in their neighborhood anyway, they can either come pick it up at the mobile market, or they can come, you know, back to our food hub, or we can drop it off. But we've made it very convenient for a corner store to be able to have produce. And because so much of it is local, then they can also do this thing that I don't think I mentioned already, which is the Lehigh Valley Fresh Food Bucks. That goes through our Buy Fresh, Buy Local partner here in the Lehigh Valley, where people who have SNAP benefits, the EBT card, they can get up to $10 of a matching benefit for local produce every day, basically. So if they go to a corner store and they spend $10 for anything on their EBT card that would be qualifying for SNAP benefits, they can get up to $10 of produce for free, which is really cool. So that also shifts the social norm, because there's actually apples in your corner store now. You know, there's onions, there's during the growing season, we can't even keep the melons in stock. Like those are going so quickly. So I think it shows that there is a demand for this type of food, but we have to make it easy, accessible, convenient, affordable. We've sold, not given away. We have sold over 100,000 pounds of produce in these neighborhoods of food insecurity since 2016. So over our 4-year season so far, our 4-year market run that we had, 100,000 pounds. So that's a lot of money back into our local farm community, but that's a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables into our neighborhoods that did not have access to this before the mobile market got on the road and the corner store started. So I there was a lot of naysayers in the beginning when we started the mobile market. We had a wonderful foundation, Two Rivers Health and Wellness Foundation, that gave us catalyst funding to be able to get it off and going, because they really believed in the concept. But a lot of people were like, nobody wants to buy that type of food. You know, nobody wants it. So why are you trying to take it into the areas? Nobody's going to pay for it. No, you know, maybe if you gave it away, but what we found is no, the schools, the kids coming out of school, they come running up and they're like, what do you have to eat? And we can actually see over time, because they know us already. So like we are a familiar face to them. Like they know who we are. So they come running up, and a lot of our schools, the kids will come up and they'll be like, it's fresh fruit and vegetable day. What can I have for a dollar? So like their parents are giving them their after school snack money to be able to spend at the mobile market. So the communities are embracing it. But this is one of those things that, again, requires ongoing funding and philanthropic support, because if it was a capitalist way of, if you could make money doing this, then I think the big grocery store chain would do it. We wouldn't have food deserts, which would be wonderful if we can ever get to that point. But I think what the Kellan Foundation model, and we call the whole thing the Healthy Neighborhood Immersion Strategy, which is bringing lots of different touch points into neighborhoods so that we're shifting the social norm together and the kind of cultural expectations of what people think of what they eat and how they move and who they hang out with. That whole immersion strategy works really well. It's the infrastructure to be able to bring in other things too. You know, the different hospital networks come in and do screenings or diabetes education with us. Other community partners come in and do things like make it, take it kitchen things, or where they'll do little cooking demonstrations of their own. But because we're already there and the community has already kind of embraced us as part of the fabric of their neighborhood, we're able to bring in other pieces. And so that structure can really go a long way towards changing the social norms.
Yeah, Megan, it's so impressive just hearing how you have created this, you know, immersion within your community, and you've really created a blue zone, just kind of hearing the momentum of how each program just built and grew on the other, and they're all pieces of this pie to really change the community towards a healthier life. You know, can only imagine the number of lives and people that you've made a difference in. I want to thank you for your time. Is there anything you want to add that we haven't had a chance to talk about?
I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the momentum of lifestyle medicine for doctors of the future. I think there are a lot more young doctors that are coming into medicine and saying, this is the type of doctor that I want to be. I want to help prevent disease and treat and reverse it by lifestyle changes. And yes, I need to know how to do the medications and I need to know the procedures, but the most important thing is helping and supporting my patients and my community to live a healthier life. So I'm adjunct faculty for some residency programs that are doing the lifestyle medicine residency curriculum, which is a partnership with ACLM and Loma Linda and the Lifestyle Medicine Education Collaborative. And just to be able to see how passionate these young doctors are, I think that, like you said, the momentum is building. So for us here in the Lehigh Valley, I am looking forward to having lots of good colleagues that are coming out of these programs as they graduate. I also am really excited to see how some of the other businesses in our community and some of the other hospitals are supporting this concept of social norms and social changes. Like, for example, we have a community canvas initiative with Lehigh Valley Health Network where the kids actually get to do artwork based on their perceptions of the things that they learned with Kellan Foundation about healthy lives. And then that artwork hangs in the hospital corridors about showing why, like, how, what the kids in our community think of for about healthy lifestyles. So like when you, those are the social nudges too, that if we've got one of our hospital systems, St. Luke's, is saying we are going to invest in young doctors that are going to learn lifestyle medicine as the way they're going to practice. And then we have another one of our hospitals, Lehigh Valley Health Network, that says we're going to support showing what our kids in the community think about being healthy. That's just putting all these different social nudges throughout the community. And I'm excited to see where we end up. It's been a great ride so far, but there's been a lot of progress in the last 15 years. So we look forward to continuing the momentum and hopefully being able to tell you in another couple of years, even more exciting stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing all the incredible work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And I look forward to continuing to listen to your podcast. You've had some fabulous guests. So thank you for all that you're doing to get the word out about how lifestyle medicine is affecting so many different lives.
Thanks.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.